Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, this is always a momentous occasion here in the dead of winter, although it's not too bad out right now. This is our midwinter edition of the gardening program on Vox Pop, and we welcome back gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum to take your calls as we think spring here at the end of January. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But jot the number down and get in the line now. 800-348-2551, the gardening show, here in the dead of winter on Vox Pop. Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff, and what a show we have for you today here in late January. Once again, to discuss gardening, our old familiar voices, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Fred Breglia, Director of Horticulture and Operations at the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. You got a gardening question? One has been burning your brain for the last several months while we haven't done one of these? Now's the time to call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Best thing to do with the emails is try to keep them relatively brief, obviously detailed, but not too long, not too many paragraphs, and then we have a shot of getting it in there. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Fred and Greg, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Right? Yeah, thanks for having us.
You see, now we think spring. Greg, what's going on over at the Ward's Nursery?
Oh, my gosh, you wouldn't believe
really?
It.
Really? You sound enthused.
Well, thanks. Actually, coming up, they're full, but I just mentioned it. We're having a couple of terrarium classes.
Okay.
Assemble your own terrarium. I'm sorry to say they are completely full, but we probably will try to do some more next end of the month or early March. However, can I briefly read a couple things?
I suppose.
You sure?
Sure.
Okay. So in March, we have raised beds and ideal soils. These are all free lectures that are about an hour long on Saturdays and Sundays, and you can find them all at the website, so yeah. I won't get too many details. That's at wardsnursery.com. We're going to have Unlocking Seed Secrets from Politics to Practical. Interesting.
You're surprised by this?
Yeah, that politics part.
Oh, wow.
Spring Garden Problem Solving.
Yeah.
Container Gardening. Small Fruit Gardening. That's just blueberries, raspberries, strawberries,
sure.
Stuff like that. I can go on and on. Native and non-native ornamentals for the garden, principles of pruning, shady characters in the garden. Fred.
Oh, Fred. Boy.
Oh, that was a shot. It's a new leaf here we're turning over.
Yeah, I'm going
to
stop
there.
It used
to be so nice.
It keeps going, but they should all be up on the website. We do ask people to kind of call and sign in so you get a free seat.
Yeah, yeah. And the website once again?
Oh, yes. It's wardsnursery.com.
Well, you know, I don't think I have made a terrarium since I was in maybe fifth grade.
Do you remember that? I remember
vaguely.
That too. Yeah.
I don't think I did too well.
I remember it pretty well because then I later found a little milk snake and put it in there.
Oh, cool.
And had just the greatest time with that.
Wow. I think I got a failing grade. I think I made it out of a Dr. Pepper can or something, and it didn't work out.
That would probably not.
Well, there's still time. There's still room.
You think so?
You can get into this class. You're never too late to start a new terrarium.
I think I'm a lost cause. Fred Breglia, what's happening at the Landis Arboretum?
Well, we are in the midst of putting together a 2017 programming, so the whole nine yards from plant sales to concerts. We did secure our concert funding, so we are going to have a full summer concert series this year. We have some great news in terms of more funding, which is actually paying for the replacement of all of our entire lilacs. A whole new lilac collection is going in this year.
The Lilacs Foundation chipping in?
It's actually a private foundation
that's
helped us out with
that's
this.
Great.
And it was money that we just didn't expect to see at the end of the year, and it came together, and a full lilac collection will be installed this year, replicating it. And we also been adding a lot of signage at nine, complete with QR codes. And
That's neat. You hold up your phone and
you hold your smartphone up, you scan it, and it brings you to an actual audio tour. So you can do like virtual tours at the Arboretum with your smartphone. We get great reception there, so bring your phone, almost all carriers.
Well, that'll keep your overhead down. You fire the tour guides, right?
That could be a problem.
Yeah, you better watch out for
security there, so I got to watch that. But, you know, one of the most exciting things I think I'm interested in launching this year is going to be a great oak hunt.
An elk hunt?
No, not elk, oak.
Oak.
As in tree,
okay,
big
trees.
Okay,
they don't move. Just saying.
Well, they move real slow, it increases the odds of finding one.
So what is an oak hunt?
Well, you know, the Landis Arboretum, I think most people know, have sort of been the home of the great oak. We had this logo tree, which is one of the oldest oaks in the region, 500-plus years old, and it succumbed to, unfortunately, Hurricane Irene. It broke the top out, and it did spit and sputter for a while and sort of try to survive, but last year it never leafed out.
Yeah.
So we have officially lost the great oak at the Arboretum, but one of the things that people have been asking, hey, what's the next biggest oak around? What's the next biggest oak around? So we said, you know what? We're going to launch an oak competition, a great oak competition this year for 2017. It'll be complete with prizes. It'll be a sponsored event, and it'll be in submission forms put out, and all the info will be posted on our website on www.landisarboretum.org. We'll probably put together a special Facebook page just for the big tree competition.
This is great. Now, of course, I assume you know which one is the next biggest, and this is one of those we have to guess the number of marbles in the jar, and you already know the answer, and you give the prize to the correct one?
Yeah, not actually the case.
Really?
Well, first off, a lot of big trees, you would think, well, they're not going anywhere. But
right.
When they get big, just like the oak at the Arboretum, they get more prone to breaking down. And I guess you could say that with, us too to some degree.
Sure.
But as you get older, they tend to break apart.
Aren't there some champion trees in the neighborhood?
There are. Yeah, we have a number of champion trees in our area. But we're really focusing on oaks, both the red oaks. Doesn't matter what species of oak. Red oaks, white oaks.
The radius is for hunting?
Well, you know, depending on how big it is, we'll... there is no radius.
Okay.
We'll
get
go if it's big enough. We'll definitely go to Mass.
Oh,
we'll go out
great.
Of state. I've got contacts throughout the nation. So if someone said we got something really crazy in another state,
oh fantastic!
I've got somebody that can officially measure that and verify that.
And when does the hunt begin?
We're going to focus probably more capital region, our area, but it, like I said, no real limits. And it's going to start from spring through fall. So stay tuned. The next show we do in March, I'll have the actual starting dates and all the info for it.
I have another question. What's going to happen with the old great oak?
Well, good question. We actually, for the first time ever, did a memorial tree for not only a person. A lot of times people pass away. My dad was one of them. He passed away. I put a memorial tree on at the Arboretum in memory of my dad. Mm-hmm. The oak tree actually is not only replaced with a memorial for the oak, which is the first time we've ever done a memorial for a tree, it actually also symbolizes a younger guy who passed away as well. So it's a memorial for a guy who used to hike to the oak all the time, meant a lot, real good guy, and he passed away. So it's a double memorial, and the old bole of that trunk, main trunk section, we've left right alone, and the new one is actually planted in the shadow or under old shade line, and that oak, the old oak, will actually continue to feed that baby one for many, many years to come. So,
well, that's exciting. And once again, the website at Landis Arboretum, Fred?
It's landisarboretum.org. You can also go to our Facebook page as well, and we'll probably set up a special page and link off of our website for the Great Oak Competition, or you could call it Oak Hunt.
Terrific. All right. You say that, and I say that as well. Our number to call here on this gardening edition of Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia, our guests. And let's go to Al in the Hudson Valley. Al, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Second year of my garden. Last year, I did raised beds. I did the square by square of 144 squares. Everything went pretty well. I'm looking to start the seedlings inside to get a jump start on everything. So I saved up a bunch of egg crates. So I was going to plant almost all my seedlings about 6 weeks before they could be planted. Is that about right, or is that not going to work?
Yeah, I would. So if you saved some seeds and you're using seeds that aren't coming in a package, you might want to do a little bit of research. But all the seed packages have generally have some estimate on the back. It says plant so many weeks before planting out date, which depends. It could be after frost if it's a tomato or a pepper. But if it's an onion, it's that planting date is much sooner. It's still when the weather's cool. So I wouldn't use just 6 weeks blindly. I would use the criteria that either comes with the package or a little bit of information. And if you want to name a couple of vegetables, we can guess at them.
Well, like carrots and beets.
Yeah, so I think carrots should be sown directly
into
the ground.
That's what I was going to say.
I don't think you should start them and transplant them. Not that you can't, but to disturb that root to pull it out of one thing and put it in another can be a little tricky for the carrot. It doesn't. You end up with kind of crooked carrots. Basically.
Huh. Yeah. Certain things like it better direct sown. You actually don't get too much further ahead by starting it inside. Carrots are a perfect example.
I have often started beets the same way, direct sown. So you're you're doing the both of these things probably around here. If you're south, maybe a little sooner, but around mid-May, late May, both of those plants.
Right.
You can start beets, though. Beets do transplant reasonably well, so you could certainly start your beets. If you're going to plant them out, say, May 20th, you'd start them about, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, as you said, before that.
Mm-hmm. And I have asparagus. Well, year one, you know, you don't get anything the first year. So, and it's said to leave the, everything like it is over the winter. So in the spring, do I cut them down or do I just let them weed themselves, you know, the tops by themselves? What do I do with those?
So all the old brown stuff that was there in the fall, you can take away anytime, even today.
Okay.
And clean that all out now. And then, of course, what you're trying to do is build this root system, get this plant really up big and strong so that when it sprouts, it's putting up some nice size asparagus, something you would be proud of, not ashamed of putting on the plate, right?
Right.
So if you're getting some heavy stems, then certainly cut those. Usually, if you're planting some asparagus out, the plant itself is like a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year plant. So sometimes you can plant a 3 year plant and almost harvest it next year.
Okay.
And so just do one cutting of any of the larger stems and then let the rest go again. And then next year you'll be able to do a few cuttings.
So people do get rather embarrassed by the size of the asparagus?
Well, you know, I just wanted to make sure everyone was, you know, sure they weren't serving.
Okay. No asparagus
tiny
going on.
Tiny asparagus.
All right, let's take a break. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery. Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Yes, in the middle of winter. It's the Gardening Show, and we'll be back.
Support comes from the University at Albany Theater Program, presenting student-centered theater in the Capital Region for over 100 years. albany.edu/theatre. Schenectady County Historical Society and the Historic Stockade, presenting Together Until the End, Schenectady and the First World War. Exhibition, film series, discussions, and speakers, ongoing, schenectadyhistorical.org. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio. FortHillAutoBody.com. And Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisan goods from more than 60 countries, mangotreeimports.com, and on Facebook.
Say, Fred, do you know what happens on Monday, February 6th?
Yes, you start being able to put money away in that box.
You don't even know. Yeah, you're close, but that's not the answer. Greg?
You open the box.
Ah!
Is it open the box?
Ding, 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 ding. What happens is the fund drive, the on-air fund drive starts on Monday the 6th at 6 a.m. And so what we're doing is, it's a million-dollar fund drive.
Yep.
So what we're trying to do is, in this WAMC lockbox, we're trying to make it halfway to the drive before it even starts.
Yeah, that's great.
As of 2:20, we have $423,164 in the lockbox.
Wow.
Okay. So we have about a week, a little less than a week and a half to go to hit the $500,000 mark. And if you at home want to make your pledge now and shorten the fund drive, WAMC.org is the place to go. Click on the lockbox icon and make your pledge. $2, $10, $1,000. What do you want? Whatever you can do. And whatever you do will help us shorten the fund drive, which begins on February 6th. It's a gardening show here on Vox Pop. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll take care of an email now and then back to the phones. This one's from Christine. What is the best way to reinvigorate a garden? I have added compost and even done a winter cover crop, but last summer the soil would barely keep parsley alive. I don't have enough room to garden elsewhere. Is there anything I can add to the soil so my organic veggies will have a chance this year? And that's from Christine.
Yep. You know, organic matter is a big one. And I know she said she added compost, but, you know, not all compost is created equal.
Mm.
And that can play a huge role. Organic matter, the molecule of a mineral soil particle, adsorbs, meaning the water sticks and also the minerals and the fertilizer and all that sticks to just the outside surface of that molecule. But in an organic particle, the actual water and the minerals and the nutrition all get absorbed internally. So that means that that organic soil particle can hold so much more water, nutrition, and really increase the capacity of that soil. So I'd say, you know, going back to what she was doing, definitely getting organic, good organic in there. Peat moss is a good one. Just helps to really help hold a lot more moisture and the nutrition.
And if you specifically think of last year, it was a very dry year.
Yeah. It was very dry.
And so a lot of things would have slowed down and not grown well had they not been regularly watered.
That's right.
There was a few items that in my garden that I sort of ignored a little too long, and they came on eventually. So making sure we get some good moisture this year, and if not, adding some moisture, some water, a little bit of, and this doesn't usually need to happen until the soil is warm, a little bit of a mulching material to hold that moisture in.
Once it's there, it'll keep that into the place.
And let's face it, we have a short season, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to go.
You bet.
We don't have a long time for growing. So there are organic fertilizers. These are simply, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium in a bag, produced sustainably that, if added to the garden, will make a significant difference to growth as long as there is enough moisture in the soil and the soil is in good shape.
Yeah, especially when you keep using that same space. If you're not putting supplemental organics back in terms of food, then that food or that crop does not have what it should to pull from that soil
and
profile.
Parsley specifically is a little slow. It's not the quickest plant out there. So, again, the water was probably the limiting factor last year.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Vox Pop, the gardening show here today. And Rich in Albany. Rich.
Yeah, hi. I called about I have a blue spruce tree in my backyard that was planted from probably about 10 years ago from a little sprout from Arbor Day thing. And it's gotten to be about 10, almost 12 feet tall right now. I was wondering how hard it would be to transplant something like that. I know it would have been easier when it was half the size, but...
It's 10-12 feet.
Undertaking to transplant something like that?
Yeah, you could definitely transplant that spruce, no problem. You said it's like 10-12 feet. It's going to be a pretty big and fairly heavy root ball on there, but if you have a few friends or a couple of neighborhood kids, or if you wanted to go as far as to actually pay someone, there are companies that specialize in moving that. They could pop that out of the ground and put it right in. So if you really want
to... That might be the way to go, because it does look... And it's the thing is, it ended up being too close to a deck. We didn't really expect to get that big. But you're from the Ward's Nursery, or?
Oh, I'm from the Landis Arboretum, but Greg over here is from the Ward's.
Where do you live?
Because I've been to both those places. They're great. The rare and unusual plant sale at the Arboretum. I've been to and got some nice plants there.
Oh, great.
And Ward's, I did a lot of work at Lennox and was out in that direction and stopped in there and got some nice plants
that's
there,
great.
Too.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich. We appreciate the call. And let's see who else is on the line here this afternoon. Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
How you doing?
Good.
I was wondering if you're the guy that does the planting and nursery, though, if he knows where Ghent is.
Ghent.
Yes, I do know where Ghent is.
You ever hear of Temple's Lumberyard there?
Temple's Lumberyard.
Is that the fellow with some compost?
Yeah, and he has lumber there and whatever. But there's a big oak tree that people tie a yellow ribbon around there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Fred, this is what you're interested
perfect.
In. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fred wants to.
Excuse me?
Fred from the Landis Arboretum is the one who will have the hunt for the great oak.
Yeah, we're looking for the biggest oaks and undescribed. You know, basically, it doesn't matter where it is. We just want to find where are the greatest oaks. And, one thing you could do next to, I don't know if you're going near that oak tree anytime soon, but if you could just measure the circumference up about 4.5 feet from the ground, it wouldn't hurt to take a photo of that as well. And if you send me that information,
on Route 66.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
If you're on email, you could send an email to fred@landisarboretum.org.
Okay.
And send some basic measurements, guesstimates for height, but the trunk circumference is typically the biggest factor.
Oh, great. Is there a ratio generally that you can go with, but from circumference to height?
There is. There's actually there's a standard formula that actually American Forest in D.C. puts out a national the National Big Tree Database.
Yeah.
And there's a standard formula. It's a height and its circumference in inches, height in feet, and then 1/4 of the average crown spread, all lumped together to
What's
create a point
spread?
Total. Crown yes. spread is how much the branch is actually spread out in one in both directions.
Yeah.
So you look at kind of the shortest side and the longest, the widest side, and then you come up with an average on it. It gets pretty technical in terms of how to measure these trees and accurately, but the lasers that we use, you can get them down to like literally an inch of accuracy in terms of how tall and how high these trees are and how wide they are. Mm. But the biggest factor in that formula is the trunk circumference.
Okay.
So trunk circumference in a photo, I could, you know, tell you probably whether or not that's
you're in the ballpark.
You're in a ballpark or not. And if it is in a ballpark, I'll take a trip out.
Very
or
cool.
I'll send somebody else.
Do you remember off the top of your head what the old Great Oaks circumference was?
At the Arboretum, it was about 16-foot circumference.
Wow.
And it was not the biggest oak around, I will say, but it was one of the oldest oak trees around. We had a branch come off that maybe 8-9 years ago that was solid, and I counted the rings on the branch, and we had about 389 rings on a branch of that tree. So we know it was one of the oldest ones around, but it's growing at a really high altitude kind of spot. It's like over 1,000 feet, and we have really compacted sort of rocky soils, and those are the good spots. So tough sites and yield big trees over a long period of time.
Well, let's go back to the phones here at 800-348-2551. Jerry in Southwick. Jerry.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Three quick questions. I think I'm only allowed two, but I'm going to try it. Hey, when do you stop cutting the asparagus? I've had it in for about 6 or 7 years now, and it's wonderful. So, when do you know when to stop cutting it?
I don't know that you ever do know. You know, guys who grow asparagus commercially, they plant them 2 years, they cut them, and then they start over again. So for you and I, it's really you're trying to make sure that they sprout again. And so usually 3 cuttings, 4 cuttings on really mature plantings would probably be, you know, the limit. But you need to make that decision in the end. You want to make sure they sprout so you have something next year. You don't want to diminish them too much, but you want to get some good asparagus out of there.
Okay, second question. I planted fruit trees about 4 years ago and growing them as espalier, and I don't know if I chose the right trees, but I did lose one in the drought this past year. Any recommendations on a good what you use to I don't know if I bought the right thing the first time. What would you use to replace that?
For a fruit tree.
Would it be a dwarf?
I would focus more on dwarf trees because it's going to be hard. Although, you know, you could certainly get an espalier to go up the side of a huge building, and I've seen that done before. So it's not really a size thing, but most of the time it is because, let's face it, you have to maintain that, and I don't think you want to go up with a ladder truck to have to get the top. So
I have it contained on three wires. Yeah.
So dwarf would be definitely good. Pears work really, really well.
Yeah.
Seen it done really well with pears.
There's going to be dwarfing rootstocks on trees, so dwarf, semi-dwarf, and then standard, and you know, because you're trying to contain the tree, you would not want to choose standard.
That's
and
right.
If you can choose dwarf, that's
really now I have 2 apples, a pear, and a peach.
Okay.
Would you recommend any one over another?
Or pear. What else? As Fred said, pears are great for a couple of reasons. One, they're prettier. The leaves are sort of more reflective,
absolutely.
And they are less likely to get spotty. So that's the main reason. As I said, actually, also they are less likely to get spotty, so you're not really having to. Aesthetically, they're better.
Yeah, and then branch structure from a tree architecture standpoint, they actually also the pears also put out a fairly nice right angle to the branch in most cases, and that lends itself to creating that espalier a little bit easier,
right.
A little less
right.
work on your part to make a nice product.
That's
nice
fun
plant.
To do once you realize how to do it. And last question is. Compost available in mulch, in large quantities, like a pickup truck full
absolutely.
Whatever. Can you buy it that way?
Yep.
Where would you go?
You know, I know there's a few local sources out our direction where we tend to go. So if you wanted to send me an email, I could, you know, depending on where you are, and I say our area, I'm thinking Schoharie, Montgomery County. If that's too far.
No, I'm in Massachusetts.
Yeah. So then I think Greg would probably have.
So in the Berkshires.
Is well-rotted cow manure considered compost?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It doesn't mean that it's going to be complete and have everything you want, but I will say this, having used very, very, very well broken down, really old cow manure, incredible results in the garden with
them.
Oh,
great.
Can I name three?
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and the show's great.
Oh, Jerry, thanks a lot. And Greg, you wanted to mention.
Well, if I can mention three quick sources in the Berkshires for bulk compost.
Sure.
There's in Dalton, there's one called Holiday Farm. In Lee, there's one called Meadow Farm. And in Sheffield, there's one called Linings.
Okay. And I know around here, sometimes towns, I know my town will offer it up, and you can come and just pick up.
That's
compost.
True. A lot of times you can get it free from the town.
Yeah,
and
for a very low price.
Yeah, exactly. Or very, very.
There's also
very
a gentleman in Ghent. I don't know the name, but that's what I thought that gentleman mentioned.
There's a lady in Ghent, too.
Yeah.
It's an old poem I'll talk about during the fun drive. Mark in Conway, Mass. Mark, you're on.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Hey, quick question about Brussels sprouts. I get the most beautiful plants, and it happens almost every year, but the Brussels sprout themselves is just leaf. There's no bulk to it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah.
Why would that be?
One of the things, and I find that happens to me on occasion as well, but one of the things you can consider doing is when they're looking really good, and this is probably late September, but still a little early to harvest, you can take the top off the plant.
So, like sucker the top, you mean?
Exactly.
Yep.
And that does make a big difference in bulking up the Brussels.
Yep. It'll throw the hormones that shape plant growth and redirect them. So instead of getting elongation, you're now going to get more potential fruit.
I do think moisture does play a role as well. And again, last year was a little dry. They were a little delayed. Yeah. But nipping the top does make a big difference.
Okay. Well, they do get very long and tall, so that makes sense that you just said.
And they keep
going.
Yeah,
and my land
is
wet, so it's never a problem with moisture. I have wet land.
Okay.
You might consider a little bit of, as Greg had mentioned before, some supplemental organic fertilizer, too, because sometimes if it's too much nitrogen they're getting, it'll also push more leafy growth and tall, healthy plants without a lot of fruit
set. Certainly a soil test.
So it might be good to have a soil test. Yep. And you could take
let me run this by you, then. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, for soil tests, there's a couple of ways you could do that. One of them is just pH, and you could take that to, at least in our area, the local cooperative extension does that. But for a more detailed fertility test we're talking under $20 probably here in New York State, you could send it out to Cornell University, and they'll actually do a complete analysis on that soil, and you can even specify what kind of crops you're growing, and they'll tell you how that soil is for that crop, and if it needs adjustment, they'll even give you the recommendations to the adjustment.
All right.
Yeah, because my kale does wonderful. It's just the Brussels sprouts, they just don't form. But let me run one more thing by you. I have all the access I need to compost the cow crap through a farmer friend.
Nice.
And I really throw it on there. Could I be adding too much?
Well, that is nitrogen, and that's the thing we're talking about. Too much nitrogen, it sort of ties up with the other elements, and if it's not getting enough potassium and phosphorus and other micronutrients, it's going to put out a lot of really good-looking leafy growth. Now, with kale, all you really want is leaves, so it's going to respond really, really well to that. So, too much cow manure could create a very nitrogen-rich environment, which would put out tremendous amounts of leafy growth, but not enough fruit set. So you might want to add that supplemental phosphorus potassium.
Let's go to Sheila in Heath, Massachusetts.
Fertilizer.
Sheila, you're on the Gardening Show with Greg and Fred.
Hello. I'm interested in buying a greenhouse this spring. And I'm not really sure where to put it. Put it in the sun, put it partially in shade. Would you happen to know the answer to that?
Well, the question we have for you is, what is it you want to grow in that greenhouse? What is it going to be used
I really for? Probably seedlings. I really didn't really give that any thought, but just to get a little head start on the garden.
Yeah. So if that's the idea and you're primarily using it just for the spring, then as much sun as you can give it would be what I would recommend, I think. If you're going to run it year-round and keep various plants in there, summer, late spring and summer can get a little hot, and so having some shade is going to be very helpful. But if you're going to be done with it by June, then no, sunny spot.
You could also put like a shade cloth material over the greenhouse, too. So if you did decide, oh, my God, it's getting too much sun, you can shade that off. You can keep it cooler with a shade cloth material. You could purchase that through the same company you get the greenhouse.
Oh, okay then. Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Oh, thanks, Sheila. We appreciate it. Over to Joe in North Chatham, New York. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to point out there's a very large oak tree on Bashford Road in North Chatham. It's a Quercus bicolor.
Awesome. Big swamp and, white oak. Awesome.
Yeah, and it's about 6 feet across on the base, and I believe it's a registered tree. I'm not sure all the information on it, but I know you're all discussing the you know, the oaks earlier, so I just wanted to point that out, that that's one location that there is a very large old oak.
If you think of it, if you could send me an email with any info on that, or, you know, we're going to have some official forms up soon, but please send me an email to fred@landisarboretum.org. A photo of the tree would be ideal, and a measure at 4.5 feet from the root flare up on the base at circumference. Wrap a tape or a piece of string around there if you don't have it and measure the string. I really just need that number. Guesstimates with height and stuff like that is fine for now.
And, Joe, you sound like you're driving, and I'll tell you that the link to the Landis Arboretum is on the Vox Pop page for this program. So if you see the gardening show, you'll see a link there. Hey, thanks a lot for that call.
Thank you.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's quickly get another call in here before the next break, and over to Casey in Rexford. Casey.
Hi. I'm having an erosion problem behind my house, about 10 yards behind my deck is a sloping area. It's clay. It tends to acidic soil, and it's southwest facing. And I'm looking to plant something, hopefully, that will stop this erosion of that area. I'm getting kind of concerned about it.
Okay. Well, you know,
any ideas, guys?
A lot of options. You could plant shrubs if you were interested in potentially a woody plant. Shrubbery does a real lot with erosion control. It really, really holds that soil well. There's a lot of options for shrubs. You could literally, you know, pick the height and pick the width you want it to be, and we could certainly find something.
Can we parse that a little, maybe?
What, say again?
Can we parse that with some? Can we parse that with some shrubbery ideas of maybe a couple of tall ideas and a couple of smaller ideas?
So why don't we do that? But let's do that after the break.
Easily,
And tell you what, Casey, listen on the air here, and we will come back and give you some ideas on that. Certainly. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll take a break and be back for the home stretch.
Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. skidmore.edu/tang. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identity through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. shannonrose.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com.
Welcome back to the show. 800-348-2551. You know, in the old days, we didn't have computers, and there weren't computer failures, and I wasn't in the studio worrying about it. And here I am. The computer for the phones has caused me some grief, I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But while I'm working on that, why don't you talk about the shrub issue? And, you know, we had a question about what shrubs to plant on a hill that is eroding.
It really does, I guess, depend a little bit on, and we didn't ask her this, what the exposure was in terms of sunshade. So that would play a role. Assuming that it's a part
she
sun,
said it was southwest
part shade,
facing.
Or even sunny, things that I have used, and I just pick a couple, and then I'm sure Greg's got quite a few too. But at our house, we have a really big slope. We've done really well with daylilies. We've done well with a number of different spireas in there. We've actually even put a few shrub roses that we actually got from you guys.
There, you know, there are some pretty carefree shrub roses.
Yep.
You know, another fun plant, Potentilla, is a.
Yep.
These are like spirea, a low sort of spreading summer blooming thing. There are, you can go into hydrangea. You could go into winterberry. Some of the native honeysuckles stay low and, yep. and are spreading. A thing called fragrant sumac or rus
does really
aromatica.
Well.
Grow low specifically yeah. is used just for that kind of thing. It's a nice medium height ground cover woody plant that would mm-hmm. fill in. If that person wanted to email some of the, you know, the ward's nursery with, we would then ask for some, probably a few more questions.
Okay.
And we could come up with a little yep. Design form.
This one came in via email during the break. This is from, I'll just say, Ms. Smith. I have no idea what her name is. Any suggestions for dealing with the voles that are devastating the spinach growing in my hoop house? Oh, that's from Neil, actually. Well, Mr. Neil wants to know, first yeah. of all, what's a hoop house?
Well, a hoop house is like a greenhouse. It's constructed using basically piping of some sort, sometimes metal, sometimes plastic piping.
Yeah.
But it's used a lot of times for storage of plants throughout the winter. And they use it for sometimes starting things up in the spring as well. It's a storage yard. They usually take the plastic off in the summer or just empty it out. And voles can be really bad in there. But, you know, the good old cat, definitely if you have a cat or don't, you know, get one. Makes a difference, especially yeah. if it's an outdoor kind of cat.
Right.
But mouse traps work really well with peanut butter. Yeah. Sometimes peanut butter dipped with a bird seed kernel. Or
how many voles do you think there are, though?
We have
there could be quite a few voles.
We have several hoop houses, and we set mouse traps.
Yep.
When they're causing a problem, when you notice them, that usually means you're going to catch 7 or 8 of them.
Yep.
All right, let's go. Okay, I think the computer works. I have no idea. This might or might not be Dave in Cambridge. Is this Dave in Cambridge?
Well, no, but I can play him on TV.
No, for
actually, no, I'm curious. Actually, this really is Dave in Cambridge.
All right, Dave.
Yeah. There's a couple of things really quickly. One, for to give your technicians a break, this is not a radio phone. I'm calling you on a telephone that's made out of Bakelite. Rotary dial dates back to the Eisenhower administration, which means you can probably hear me.
Well, that's true. You are clear.
And there's another thing, Ray, that I'd like to bring up
sure.
quickly before I try to stump the band, is your bumper music.
Yeah.
I don't know. I may or might not be a hipster, but I think you had Bob Vernon on the phone this summer, and you were playing this guitar interlude. And I go, you know what? That sounds like Chuck.
Oh, and my gosh.
It turned out it was Chuck DeLoya.
Chuck DeLoya, yes.
Wow.
I use Chuck's music, Chuck and Art Bernstein, often as bumper music.
I have to admit, I cheat a bit. I was in a band with him for a year.
Oh, there you go.
So I just kind of, you know, okay. Now, here's the part where I try to, while we're being musical, stump the band.
All right, fine.
Is growing up, is my grandmother's house had this vine that would flank the two sides of the porch called a Dutchman's pipe. And it had these large sort of heart-shaped leaves, and then the flower, which was green, sort of a light green, pea green, and it was shaped like a Dutchman's pipe, you know, sort of like a drain trap, only without the relief of the trap in the bottom. It just looked like literally like a Dutchman's pipe. And can you still acquire these plants on, shall we say, new construction and make these buggers grow, or did I just stump the band?
Okay.
No,
you can definitely get them.
That's something that you know, Ward's offers every year. It kind of falls in and out of popularity, but we always have some. And if you're looking for some, we can find some more. Dutchman's pipe.
Oh,
just
yeah.
ask
yep.
for that.
And
any, if you're close to another garden center, they probably would stock it as well.
Yep. So, it's an old plant, but it is one that's still around. Sometimes those old ones, like if you try to go after the original daylilies, without being hybridized.
What happened?
Good luck. It's been hybridized and hybridized and hybridized and hybridized, and now trying to find the actual species is really, really hard. But
very
not the case in the Dutchman's pipe.
All right, Dutchman's pipe. That's good. That's D and Knox. You're on next, D.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Start now.
You might as well
go right for it.
Okay. Okay. My question is planting trees up in Knox. I've got real clay, rocky soil, and I've planted trees. You know, taking the hole 3 times the width of the root ball and down just as deep and putting in compost and things, and they'll do okay for a year or so and then die. And I don't know if they're hitting the edge of the hole I prepared and hitting this hard, rocky soil, if there's anything I can do to you know, loosen up the soil around them further out?
Well, you know, one thing we do encourage people to plant when they plant trees is to actually not overly, especially when you say this rocky kind of hard soil. With those kind of soils, you got to be careful with amending the backfill.
Okay.
Because if you actually create a really rich compost hole, it's kind of like the equivalent of feeding, I use my dog for the analogy, the yellow lab. If you started him on steak from day one, he'd probably never eat the dog food I give him today. They need to get used to the dog food, or in the case of the tree, they need to get used to that hard soil.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of use the soil that comes out of the hole to go back into the hole. The depth is very important. Make sure that you know, as you sort of said, that you never go any deeper. The root flare, the place where the trunk and roots meet, should be a little bit above ground, not ever below.
Yeah.
Very visible. Yeah. And the two times, three times wide is perfect. But you want to try to be careful not to overly amend the backfill with lots of good stuff. A lot of people do that because, ooh, I don't want to get the same soil back in. But think about the way the tree's roots are going to grow. They're going to grow out 2 to 3 times the spread of the canopy. So they're going to go everywhere. And if they don't, and you give them a really rich hole, those roots will stay right in around that hole, and they'll never want to go out and eat that hard, heavy soil. So a little bit of amending, great, but I would be careful with that. Do you have something you
want to hold? Yeah, the last ones I planted, I tried to amend less, but I'm wondering if I should make a wider hole and
could I just suggest that generally speaking, the mortality rate, you know, in the first year is tremendous, and so it's probably actually not the soil amending that you're doing that is causing any issue. Not that what Fred said isn't what you should be doing, and it would be helpful. Always making the hole significantly wider but no deeper is what's recommended, so that there is a larger reservoir of newer loosened soil that the roots can work themselves into. But I would suggest moisture, if everything else is done correctly, that this tree would, you know, these trees need to be watered well, and they need to be watered well weekly throughout the growing season of the first year.
Yep.
And we're finding that in the second year, where we all feel that the trees are now sort of on their own and can handle it, we're getting these 4-week droughts, these 6-week droughts all of a sudden in the middle of spring or summer.
Yeah, they're
and
not those, built for that.
Those windows are very stressful as well. Even though the tree might not look bad and it might not drop any leaves, it suffers. So.
Yep.
So continue watering in the second year, and you'll probably have better results.
Yep. And one other thing I guess I'll throw out there, because I've seen it, is overwatering is also an issue. You could do just as bad with the results of plant growth with overwatering. So too much watering, it's like Greg said, once a week is typically good saturation. Once a week is typically, during drought, adequate. Sometimes people think more the better, and you can overwater it. It'll actually create the same kind of symptoms as the drought did.
Let's go to Susan in West Park. Susan, you're on.
Hey. So I'm calling about the asparagus, the gentleman who called about asparagus, when to cut it.
Sure.
So I've had about 6 to 8 crowns of asparagus that I planted about 15 years ago. And an Amish farmer told me that once it starts coming up in the spring, when it's about 4 or 5 inches, clear cut every day or every other day, depending on how fast it's growing, until the first day of summer, and then stop. And we've been doing that for 15 years. And I'll tell you, by the time I get to first day of summer, I'm really sick of asparagus.
So how long did you grow your asparagus before you started harvesting?
The first year I only harvested for 1 week, and the second year I harvested for 2 weeks, and the third year I harvested for 3 weeks, and then after that I just go till the first day of summer.
Fantastic.
June 21.
Okay. That's great.
Great. Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Susan, thank you so much. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And I believe Irene in Amherst has been waiting longest. Irene, you're on.
Hi. I have another question about asparagus.
Well, of course.
I have a 15-year-old, maybe a little bit older bed that's been doing beautifully and is very prolific. But this past year, it looked like it was almost down to a quarter of its production. And I'm assuming it's not because of drought, because you harvest in the spring. But maybe listening to one of your last reports, you said that sometimes there's a drought in the spring. But I'm wondering if a bed can die out or something is going on under the soil.
Well, it's not so much die out, but they get crowded. They're, you know, they've been there for so long, there's not a lot of room left for them to grow. You know, they will move around. You'll have some coming out of the center for the first few years, and then it'll sort of work off to the edges. So
That's right.
You could consider starting anew. You can, and you have two options. You could go get some new asparagus, you know, mail order, or try a new variety if you want to, or you could take up all of your asparagus, divide them out, clean them up, sort of remember what they look like, and then replant those original sort of fist-sized clumps, possibly in a new location. But if you were to put them in the same location, you would re-amend that soil first as well.
So would I dig them out in the spring, or would I wait until after production this year?
I that's up to you. You could do it in the spring, and of course that would sort of really affect production this spring. So you may not, you really shouldn't probably be harvesting too much at that point. You probably could harvest a little, or you could wait till next fall and do it, or you could do it right away. It depends on what you want to do.
I can do it anytime. Hard.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Irene. We appreciate it. Fred Breglia is here, and Greg Ward is here. It's a midwinter edition of the Vox Pop Gardening Show. And Mike in Holyoke. Mike, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was listening to you talk about pear trees. I bought some property about 5 years ago, and it had a pear tree on it. And for the first 4 years, it was excellent. I've never done anything with fruit trees or anything before. I'm a city guy, and I'm just getting pears left and right, and this summer I got nothing. I didn't harvest a thing.
Yeah, this past year there was a weird there was some frost and cold temperatures that blighted out a lot of the flower buds that were coming on to some orchards around our area in particular, and that affected apples, that affected pears quite dramatically. And since you seem to be getting them every year and this year no, I tend to think you probably fell into one of those categories where you just got too cold a temperature too late in the spring, and it did some damage to the flower buds. The rest of the leaves looked really good, though, right?
You weren't alone.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, so that sounds like it.
It was nothing I did or didn't do that caused that.
No, it sounds like environmental, and there's not a real lot you could have done to probably fix that.
So this year, because of the dry weather, there's probably some very good bud set, so you probably will have lots of flowers. Hopefully the spring will be moderate and we'll get some good pollination. You would consider, though, if you haven't been pruning this tree, there's probably some pruning that you might want to consider.
All right. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for that. And, what happened was the computer shut down. Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly sure who's next, but I believe TJ in Gardner should be. TJ, you got a minute or two here. Go ahead.
All right. Trying to keep it quick. Thanks for taking my call. Looking at, can you hear me okay?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. I have an area of our property that's previous owner bulldozed every tree on the property. So we're trying to just put a little privacy between us and the neighbors a few hundred feet away from the house. So nothing right up close. And looking for an evergreen, and we're kind of shooting in the dark trying to make a decision. We'd like something that looks somewhat rustic and hopefully, wouldn't be not looking for something towering, but maybe full.
Yep. I personally like Norway spruce.
Family.
I like Norway spruce.
I looked at the Norway, and I didn't know if there was any others that I might be overlooking. We talked about that.
There certainly are a lot of options. I'll just say, I guess my pick is Norway just because it's a really, it doesn't have a lot of disease problems. Blue spruce is a beautiful tree, but they get a lot of needle cast right now, so you tend to lose them, especially if you're planting a lot of them. You might want to think about using a diversity of different species too. They always say, more limit your amount of the same species, especially if you're doing a larger section to maybe 10% of any one particular kind of tree. So if something did go wrong, it wouldn't take out the whole line.
Yeah, but otherwise,
I was probably only looking to plant two or three, and our only other concern would be resistance to deer if there's something better than others. But
right. So white pine is just another plant. Yep. I know you don't want it to get too tall, but it's going to take 40 years for those things to get tall.
And there are varieties where you could get that would be a little shorter too.
All right, this one came in via email from Jeremy. Hey guys, love the program as always. My wife and I recently purchased a home in Great Barrington, and we're so pleased to learn that we have fruit trees on the property, a pear, an apple, and a peach tree. I know it has been tough the last few seasons for fruit trees, so do you have any quick recommendations for the end of winter, spring season to help these trees along into a healthy future? pruning, feeding, etc. Any info would be much appreciated. That's from Jeremy.
We're offering a pruning workshop, free pruning workshop in March. I can't remember which day unless I look at
it. We can find it at your website.
But you can find it on the website, wardsnursery.com. Come by and just learn how to prune your fruit trees. It's pretty exciting once you kind of figure it out.
Is that the most important thing?
You know, pruning is a really big one. You know, putting down fertilizer and another one you can do in the spring, and you want to do that when the buds begin to swell, but they haven't actually opened. That's a really, really great time to fertilize. It's not the only time to fertilize, but it's probably the one most that will most impact the plant's health in a positive way.
Now, I don't know about pears or anything like that, but I've heard with apples, 1 year on, 1 year off.
Yeah, they do tend to be more cyclic than, you know, most plants in nature are, sometimes every 5 years. But fruit trees tend to have a heavier set 1 year and a little bit less the next set. But that doesn't mean nothing 1 year. That just means
less. Except for last year.
Except for last year, which really was, not because of that, because of the weather.
Well, the show went by quickly. Greg and Fred, guys, thanks for being here. And we'll see you, I guess, in March, right?
Yes.
March.
Once again, the website, Greg?
Is wardsnursery.com.
And Fred?
LandisArboretum.org.
And good luck for the oak hunt.
Keep your eyes out.
All right, man. Right. Thanks a lot. Support comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting their fourth annual evening of Jewish storytelling with live entertainment and dinner for adults and children, February 12th, 5:30 p.m., Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, 518-584-8730. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear, Albany.com. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. WaterwheelVillage.com. Thanks again to Greg Ward and Fred Breglia, and thanks to you for listening on this gardening edition. We'll be back with regular monthly gardening shows starting March. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered by Deb Malik. And wow, we got Food Friday tomorrow. Stand by now for news.